RadioInfluence.com. The future is now.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Dark to Light podcast with
Hump Day Val.
Hump Day. It is Hump. It's Wednesday.
Yeah, it went by quick this week.
It sure has been, of course, because I'm away, and so it always moves faster. This is Beans coming to you live from Florida.
From America's basement.
Yes. Well, I mean, that's New York, isn't it?
No, New York is America's armpit.
Oh, okay. Okay. Big difference.
Yes.
Big difference. Okay, so I am actually forced to hold the microphone, so you're hearing noise, and that's bothering me, but I'm going to do my best to keep it straight, not moving. Okay, so we have a lot to talk about today, Frank. A lot of stuff has happened in just 2 days. A lot of Spygate stuff after it felt like it was really quiet for a while there.
Yeah, it was.
And we didn't talk at all on Monday about the Google Project Veritas happening.
And since Monday, there's just so much more to talk about, too.
Yeah.
It's unreal.
It is. And I also want to, because I haven't had a chance to, I want to talk to you about your interview with Jeffrey Peterson.
Okay.
So, you know what? Why don't we start by you telling us what you learned in that interview?
Well, what I learned in the interview is that there has been, especially that Janet Napolitano, big sister herself, was a really integral part in building up relations down at the southern border in the state of Arizona. But then, of course, when she slipped into the DHS, it started becoming a little bit more of a national operation. But that there is a really strong group of grouping of people between the Mexican PRI that has been in power since 1929 and the Democrat Party in particular. I always try to draw lines of distinction between what we've found to be, you know, bipartisan scheming down at the border when it comes to immigration and detention centers and pretty much human trafficking, all at the expense of taxpayers and whatnot, faith-based initiatives, how they're involved. So there is that, but there is something really nefarious going on there between the Democrat Party in particular and the Mexican PRI. And Jeffrey really spent a good amount of time. And I, for a lot of the people who never heard of him before, I made sure I started from the beginning with his background, his professional background. And he really laid out just what he has been able to see. The friends that he has that are, I mean, just from everybody, from past Mexican presidents to Carlos Slim himself. And there's a lot of interesting things going on there. And we've been able to see the influence that Mexico actually has on the United States and opening up the doors to what that could mean in certain respects regarding Nexium 2, drugs. It's big. It really is big. So I spent a lot of time with him last night, starting from the beginning. It's only first half hour, I think, or 40 minutes that I've been able to talk to him. So I didn't try to bite off too much more than we could chew. And I think it's worth a listen. I really do.
Could you like share for people, because a lot of people don't know who he is, who he is, what his, he's like a tech titan, correct?
Well, back in the late 1990s, during, as he describes it, and as we all know it to be now, during the dot-com boom, he went and he started a social media platform or a website around that time called Que Pasa, which was the first Spanish-speaking social media or internet platform that was really popular. And he eventually sold that. It's listed on NASDAQ. I think it's now Meet Me or something now. But he sold that to former Rick Scott, Scott of Florida governorship fame. So there's that. And he's been involved in a lot of different types of tech ventures. And I think that from all of his experience living in Arizona, being involved in politics in a nominal way, but also in just dealing with technology and services that, you know, our neighbors to the south would really appreciate. He's been able to rub shoulders with a lot of different types of people. So he's in that tech field, and he's an entrepreneur. There's a lot of information out there. He's on Twitter. You can find him at Jeffrey P. No, the real Jeffrey P. J-E-F-F-R-E-Y-P. At real Jeffrey P. on Twitter. And we've been following him for a long time. And I think that it starts getting really interesting when it comes down to the Nexium bit. So we talked a lot about that last night. It's only about a half hour to 35 minutes, his segment. I really suggest people take a look at it.
Yeah, I always say, like, with these whistleblowers and people that come forward in this way, like, listen to what they have to say and come to your own conclusion about it, right? Because there's no way, like, you know, I think he's got photos of him with some really high-level Democrat folks. He was a huge donor, which is verifiable if you do, you know, searches for that stuff. But, like, for example, and I haven't had a chance to listen to any of this yet, so please bear with me, but I started getting, like, this overwhelming bunch of emails that say that Kevin Shipp, who is a CIA whistleblower, self-proclaimed, right? He was in the CIA. He came out and he's talked about some of the programs there and what their purposes are and stuff like that. I've never met the guy. Brief interactions, very brief. He has started saying that every single thing that Dennis Montgomery has ever said is false. And that's what people are coming to me with now. Like, he says that Montgomery's lying, that none of this is true, that it's all bull. There's a few reasons why I have a hard time believing that. One of them is that he's gone to the FBI, he's gotten immunity, and he, you know, has shared this information with other people. So I have a hard time believing that none of it's true. And again, I haven't listened to Kevin Shipp talk about this, so I don't know what he said. I don't know at all, direct from his mouth. But I will tell everybody that I got an email from Dennis Montgomery after I went out with the story about the New York Times, mm-hmm. asking me not to talk about anything anymore and that he's cutting off communication with me.
So that's that. All right.
So, I mean, that's why I was so careful about the credibility thing and I said what I said. Baffling to me why he
and,
said
and
that.
Didn't you only ever go forward and publish what he had sent you because he requested you to make it known?
Yes.
And then he, okay. Yeah. Alrighty.
Yeah, so I asked him permission. I've written confirmation that he said, yes, you're free to share this email. In terms of that, I'm all good. He says that there's some court order or something that's preventing him from talking to me anymore. I don't get it. It is what it is. Take it for what it's worth. Just put that up and chalk it up against the rest of the stuff that we're hearing. And this is why with these people, and this is why I focus so strongly on open source journalism, because, you know, you get somebody emailing you for months, you decide you're going to come forward, you know, finally after being kind of pestered for months about stuff. And then this happens and you're like, okay, well, look. You know, so you gotta take all this stuff and you know, and it, let's counter that with Scott McDonald, the other gentleman that I found his information in the open source, right? And mm-hmm. then I was able to connect with him and he's been nothing but amazing. He's been sharing stuff with me about his mediation. We're going to talk to his friend from the FBI when we get back. So there, that story is developing and ongoing. But, you know, it's so hard because people are such... Some people are so flaky when it comes to this stuff. And when I get back, I'll listen to everything that Kevin Shipp has to say and I'll form my own opinion, which I think everybody needs to do at this point is listen to everything from every side and come to their own conclusions. It's why I don't instruct people to think or feel a certain way about anything.
Well, yeah. Yeah. And then also it's just very disconcerting when you have all the permissions in the world that you need and you can feel so you know, unapologetic for going out and publishing something that you work directly with the source on, and then to have an email saying, yeah, can't talk to you anymore.
Yeah, I mean, that's why, you know, I question what his motives are. Like I mean I'd be an idiot not to question what his motives are.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm not even presume I don't even want to presume what those are. I just All right. Just chalk one off, like you said, and move on.
No more Dennis Montgomery. That's it. It's over.
It's all good. I wonder if Dave Janda had caught wind of that turn of events, because that's been a – anybody who has covered Dennis Montgomery's work in regard to the Hammer and other things, I wonder why. It's just odd behavior.
It's really weird that, you know, that story that I put out there got a lot of traction, obviously, not because of any other reason than it's absolutely mind-blowing to have someone come forward and say, I did this, you know – it's crazy, right? So people went nuts about it. And it was, you know, people were talking about Montgomery again because of Dr. Janda, and a lot of people have been talking about it. So right after, it was just the sequence of events of all this stuff is just super interesting to me. You could think of it from several different angles, and this is just free flow right now that other people out there are getting the benefit of, but who knows what anybody's motives are? I have no idea. All I know is that I'm just trying to get people information, and that's really all that matters to me. I don't doubt what he told me. I don't think he's lying about it, just because of all the other things that we know. So I just think something weird went on behind the scenes. I don't know.
Yep. It's always the biggest thing is the biggest challenge, I would say, is always trying to determine what somebody's motives are when they're disseminating information on the internet, whether no matter what role it is, if it's a blog or a vlog or whatever the hell it is. So
I don't know. I mean, I suggested several times to him along the way that he should put everything up on a website and let the people have at it. And I don't know if that's still in the cards or whatever's going on behind the scenes. Who knows?
Yeah. That would be completely motiveless.
Yeah.
Motive without motive.
Without motive. You have motiveless. Whatever. That's a great word, whatever it is. But, you know, you have the ability to reach millions of people. All you need is, you know, a bunch of open source journalists to find the stuff and be like, holy moly, look at this stuff. It's out there on the internet, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And so I would think if you were really serious or unafraid about getting your story out there, that's the way you would go these days. It's the best way to go.
Well, in other news, when we were talking, you're saying all the big Spygate stuff that has been dribbling out after seemingly not a lot of ongoings, well, or goings on. See, I don't know my terms today. I've got my terms all screwed up.
Ongoings, goings on.
Motiveless.
Motiveless has to be. Let me look it up.
Without motive.
While you're talking. Motiveless.
Either way, you want to talk about distraction and you want to talk about where the priorities of everything are. Just think about the Google thing alone.
Yeah.
And how that is going on. I saw these the news about James Comey, the FBI, and these Clinton emails. There's so many aspects of the Google thing going on, actually. It's not even just the interview. It's not just the fact that the media reported breathlessly about Russian interference with a play school budget for Facebook ads and a $6,000 Google ad campaign. That's all it amounted to. But they're trying to shift the Electoral College in the United States in 2016, and they blamed it all on Donald Trump, or it was all going toward the benefit of Donald Trump. Even if he wasn't involved personally, it was definitely the reason why this bumbling oaf was made president. And they went on and on for 2.5 years about this influence in our elections. And meanwhile, here's Google saying that they are going to do everything in their power to make sure that 2020 goes the company's way.
Yeah.
And they're interviewing this woman who's lying about a sexual assault in a dressing room. Oh my God! It's
I know.
And they pass her around like it's a plate of hors d'oeuvres, like it's the pasta pate or something like that. You have Allison Camerota to Anderson Cooper. MSNBC had a couple of shots at her. It's unreal.
It is unreal. The Anderson Cooper clip is just beyond odd. And you can tell he's even his whole, first of all, motiveless is a word, by the way. And as he hangs back in his seat, it's like almost like he's like trying to get away from her.
It's like, okay, this needs to end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never seen him so flustered
last night.
I know. I know. I mean, people were like, whoa, you know, this is just this person. And then there's the whole group of people. Like, I think Mr. Reagan did a video about how she could have stolen that storyline from a TV show. What was the show?
Law and Order SVU. I watched this yesterday because Lauren is a Law and Order fan. And I said, Lauren, you got to see this. And you know, it's. You don't need this particular thing to discredit her. Her body language is ridiculous. The timing is ridiculous. Her refusal to take it farther than just making this a public smear is ridiculous. The timing of that that self-published book or whatever the hell it is, her diary that she published on Amazon, is ridiculous. It's all so opportunistic. The week of the Democratic debates, everything is going on now. They're going into campaign mode. And she's friends with Lisa Bloom, who helped raise and make $750,000 available to anybody that would come forward and slander and smear the president in the lead up to 2016, even though that didn't work. So everything about her is off. And then you can call it a coincidence, but it's season 13, episode 11, and you can go to the 42-minute and 15-second mark, and the entire rape fantasy, and in this episode, it was a rape fantasy. People were the protagonist and antagonist in this particular episode. They were involved on some kind of a dating site, and they wanted to live out a rape fantasy in that Bergdorf whatever, the same exact department store's dressing room. It was the same thing, right down to the same department store.
I know, and I'd never even heard of that department store before she came out with it.
Me neither. So, I mean, you can call it a coincidence, but man.
They're recycling the same, you know, they're going through the recycling bin and finding the things that didn't work in 2016 and trying them again. For example, this made me sick. I saw this morning and I retweeted just one of the disgusting tweets underneath it. I have a couple of things that made me sick over the past 2 days, but this one particularly. Marianne Ahern from NBC tweeted out that she heard of an incident at Aviary tonight, and that's a bar in Chicago where an employee spit on Eric Trump and Secret Service got involved. And then there's a whole bunch of leftists underneath championing this and saying how great it is and saying how we'll start a GoFundMe to pay for this guy's legal bills and, you know, we'll support him. And I retweeted one in particular and I said, you know, if this is, again, how I say all the time, a function of the media. This is what the media has done. Now, obviously, these people are responsible for their own psychotic actions and not taking the initiative to find out what's actually true. But the media has been such a huge component of stoking the division in this country. Like, if the media just reported honestly about what's gone on, nothing like this would be happening. It would never happen. But instead, they've stoked the flames. Similarly, and then we'll get into the Spygate information because I know a lot of people are like wanting that. Don't blame them. Yesterday, AOC started going crazy about the employees from Wayfair, which is a furniture company, right? Are you there?
Yeah, I'm
listening. Oh, okay. The employees from Wayfair started like a big walkout they're going to have today because they got wind that there's a government contract where the government is purchasing beds and furniture for the detention centers or the immigrant holding facilities down at the border where these people are being held as they wait for their
hearings. You mean the government is purchasing mattresses and not beds of nails?
No, they're actually purchasing furniture for the kids.
Wow. Wow. Okay, well, this is definitely something that we should protest because, you know.
Yeah, so they come out saying how everybody should boycott Wayfair. These employees need to, you know, stand up against this horrible atrocity. Somebody tweeted out,
they're buying beds for the kids.
I mean, from saying that these kids are being basically treated like slaves.
Ugh.
Or home, you know what I mean? Where they have no access to basic necessities. They don't have blankets. You know, they're sharing recycled photos from 3 years ago.
All cropping out the dates.
Cropping out the date. Exactly. To now saying, how dare Wayfair provide beds for these children at the board. I mean, it's sick. Do you not see the hypocrisy? This is what somebody says. I know I have only like 12 followers, but look at this. I can't say. Wayfair is supplying the concentration camps and their employees are pissed about it. The concentration camps. And there's a letter here from Wayfair saying, no, we're not going to stop providing goods to a government company who's or a government agency who's buying them. Not only that, but the left has failed to fund the support for these places. So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy for these people. They're never happy. It's sick. I really hope that people realize, like, how hypocritical this actually is and how disgusting these people are to use these kids who are dragged over here as political tools by these migrants, most of the time trafficking them in so that they can have passage into the country because the left can't even come together to change that rule either. They're creating the problem, complaining about the problem, and then stopping the problem from being fixed. And it's disgusting.
Yep.
It's gross.
Yes. Yeah, it is. Well, they're making generational investments, and that's just the thing. They want to make sure that everybody that comes over the border right now, both parents, children, people pretending to be parents, everybody that comes over the border right now is bombarded with layer after layer of bullshit. And the first layer is, if they let them sleep on bales of hay, which it sounds like they want them to do. There would be outrage. They are outraged that Barack Obama's administration wrapped up people like burritos in those tinfoil blankets. And they're outraged over that, but they don't want to talk about Barack Obama, so they crop out all of the dates on all of those security camera footage pictures and all that stuff. And they move on to now these beds and furniture. Because, of course, it doesn't matter that there's proper bedding and all that stuff for children and anybody else who illegally crossed the border to try to be a part of the invasion. They now are just upset that they're being detained at all, that they should be immediately bussed around the country. They should not have a court date, or they should be allowed to ignore a court date. And then here's the big thing. Once they start having children, it is the second and third generation children that are going to be the loyal Democrats. Those are the ones who grew up hearing the stories about how they were used and how they were abused and who was for them and who was against them. Those are the ones who go to American colleges and they're able to speak fluent English, and they have Democrat, liberal, globalist nonsense ingrained in their DNA. Okay, so for everybody out there, they're looking for votes. Just remember, we know they're looking for votes. They're looking to overwhelm the electorate, and they are committing to complete insanity. There is no consistency to any of these arguments, like Tracy said. But the thing is that they're committed to the second and third generation from these waves. That's what's going on here.
And you know, just to pile onto that argument that you just made there, Bernie Sanders used his 2020 email list to warn immigrants about ICE raids. And yeah, I shared the article, and I'm basically like, look, this guy is literally admitting by this that he's looking for illegals to vote for him. This is what, I mean, he's warning immigrants. And somebody said, don't be like the left. You know, he said immigrants, not illegal immigrants. And I said, why would legal people who have been here legally, aka American citizens, need to worry about ICE?
And there you go. There's well-meaning people out there. And you say, don't be like the left. So that means, what are you? That means that what? You're on the right and you're just trying to be reasonable? Well, you've already taken the propaganda. They've destroyed what it is to be an immigrant. They have blurred the lines between illegal alien and immigrant citizen. Someone who has become a citizen, who was born elsewhere, who came here, wanted to become American. They have blurred the lines, and I just wonder how many people have taken the bait. Wherever they say, oh, wow, immigrants, you have to watch out. What are you talking about?
I mean, like they have no, there's no legal way for them to, like, they're acting like there's some, like, gulag running around trying to kick people who are here legally out of the country.
You can't. First of all, it's almost $3,000 for a citizen of this country to denounce their citizenship. So you can't, you have to pay to be kicked out of this country if you are a legal immigrant. You have to pay for the pleasure of being kicked out of this country. They're not talking about immigrants.
The other thing that I forgot to mention, too, is that a while ago, Candace Owens went down to one of these places and filmed it. And it was nicer than, like, some hotels and, you know, places where, like, and then it, to the contrary of that, Brandon was in L.A. and decided to take his Melissa, who works with him, out to see the tent cities and film. I can't even believe they could barely even breathe. It smelled so bad there. I'll put it in the show notes so you can see it. It was sick. So we've got homeless Americans who openly admit that whatever money they get from the local government, they use on drugs, living in tent cities in absolute disease-infested squalor on the streets of LA, while people who come into this country, don't follow the process and come in illegally, are put up in four-star hotels with rec facilities and gyms and basketball courts and everything else. And the left is complaining about how poorly they're treated instead of focusing on our veterans, our homeless people inside, you know, the reason a lot of them are homeless is because they can't afford the leftist policies that are being shoved down their throats.
Well, they're children, as we always point out, they're children who are standing in the middle of a destroyed bedroom, a messy, messy bedroom. There's food, there's bugs, there's fruit flies, there's clothes. It smells dank in the air. The windows haven't been opened in a long time, and they're crying about how everything's such a mess and that nobody understands them. What do you did this? You did all of this. I mean, you are propping open the southern border. You are allowing your cities to be turned into absolute shit heaps. I mean, did somebody put a gun to the head of all of the California state legislatures to try to destigmatize HIV? I mean, they've even gone that far to make sure that there are less and less legal consequences for concealing a deadly disease from a sexual partner. So this is a mindset that has permeated all aspects of society that they have any chance of touching and influencing. They are sick people.
There's no other way to say it. I wish we didn't have to have this conversation, but there is, like,
it's leadership though. People are slowly adopting this on the ground level because leadership is so convincing. But it's the
not
leadership
convincing to us.
Well, there's some. Hey, listen, you just had somebody supposedly on the right telling you not to be like the left because immigrants are under siege. So it's sticking with somebody.
I wish it really is, and a lot of people say this. It is a battle. It's definite. Like, I can't think of it. It is a spiritual battle. These people are evil. This is not, you know, hyperbole. They're evil people. Evil. I look at some of these people and I'm like, what has happened to them sometime in their lives that they've been possessed by this, like, dark, disgusting, horrible sickness that makes them want to destroy everything they touch in return for more power? It's just evil. They want everyone else to be miserable, Frank. They want everyone to be miserable. They want the most depravity they can possibly wrap their arms around to be. And I'm here and I'm, like, having a great time with my kids, and I'm looking around and I'm like, we're so blessed in this country with so much. And yet there are people that are out to completely destroy everything that we stand for.
Yeah, well, they think that they're going to get their own chapter in future history books. That's the problem.
Well, the chapter in the history books is hopefully going to be slammed shut very prematurely and as per what they expect by good people standing up to do the right thing. And, you know, I've seen this. It's easy to feel helpless, but there are a lot of good people trying to do the right thing. So Speaking of good people trying to do the right thing, Frank, we had Jay Sekulow file a Freedom of Information Act request about 2 years ago with his organization, and he did a whole Periscope on this yesterday, and I haven't seen anybody sharing it really, and I haven't shared it either yet because I haven't listened to the whole thing. But you remember when the Obama administration made an amendment to that executive order to be able to share raw signals intelligence with 17 intelligence community, you know, agencies?
Yeah, it was one of the last things he did.
Yeah, like weeks before, they were able to get emails from Clapper and whoever, I forget the name of the gentleman, the other gentleman who was involved, and Loretta Lynch was involved in this as well, talking about how they needed to push this through and how they needed to get it done as soon as possible. And the assumption coming out of this is that they were doing that to cover what they had been doing in the past in terms of being able to identify leakers. So if they open this intelligence that is the most sensitive information gathered by the NSA to everybody in the entire, you know, all of the intelligence apparatus, which includes people that are unelected bureaucrats that have no business with this information, it would make it really hard for the Trump administration to figure out what was going on and where this stuff came from. So that's a big deal coming out through FOIA 2 years later. I will share that in the show notes as well. And then I wanted to play a quick clip by John Solomon on Sean Hannity last night. They're alluding basically to today being a very big day, as John Solomon has gotten his hands on Samantha Power's emails from right before, I think right before the election, from what I understood. And I had it all queued up and it went away. So just bear with me a second.
Okay.
But it's really interesting. I listened to some of it this morning and, oh goodness, I'm like juggling here. I'm juggling a microphone. I'm juggling a phone. Hold on. Bear with me. Bear. Make up another word while we're waiting, Frank.
Bearingless. No, that's a word.
See, you can't make up words. All the words you think you're making up are actual real words.
Zidalza.
Zidalza.
I made up, my buddy Mike made up that word and we went with it.
I found it.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh my God. My gosh, these poor producers today with this microphone sound. Okay.
It's a request to take the names of Americans that are supposed to be redacted in intelligence reports and unmasking the names. Tonight, I have these documents that I'm going through, Sean. These are the official emails of Samantha Power. And what I can report is that Samantha Power has the same sort of anti-Trump bias in her government emails that we saw with Pete Stroke and Lisa Page at the FBI. The FBI was investigating Trump, and they were railing against him in their official government emails and text messages. I can tell you that Samantha Power and her colleagues were doing the same thing on the official state email system. And when you see her tomorrow, what she was saying about Trump at the same time these unmaskings were going on, I'm certain it's going to trouble the American public.
Let's go back to the American Center for Law and Justice.
We're going to know about what she was saying today.
That's what Solomon's saying, and I'm assuming he's going to write a report and share the emails. Now, we're recording a little early this morning, so bear with us on not having that stuff yet. But I actually want to play this next little part of Hannity's episode last night because he's going to talk about the ACLJ, which is Jay Sekulow. Should we play that real quick? Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. I lost Frank. Hold on. Connection lost, it says. You see, this is the problem here. Let's call him again. It's busy. It's busy. So I have Frank back again, everyone. I kind of had a little moment with our audience while you were gone.
Yeah, well, you were, okay. Well, I lost you right when you were talking about...
the ACLJ.
No, it was a little bit, I forget the last thing you said. Okay, either way.
It's okay. The wireless here is just not good, and we've been blessed so far, but you know. I have a clip from Hannity that I was going to play the rest of where they talk about the ACLJ, Jay Sekulow stuff that I was telling you about. So I'm just going to play through that little bit for everyone.
Okay.
Yesterday, their report yesterday, and get your reaction. How big a piece to the puzzle is that? Because that Executive Order 12... 12- 333 again, right. On this program, We saw this as a big issue in 2017. Now that's that right. We've discovered a rigged investigation, we also saw an effort to use a phony Russian dossier, not verified, to influence an election, leaked by Intel people, the Washington Post, David Korn, Michael Isikoff, to influence the election. Russian disinformation, as the New York Times suspects. And then right. It went further in terms of being used as the bulk of information to spy not just on Carter Page, but to the Trump campaign, the Trump transition, and then the Trump presidency. You put all of that together, and now it takes on a whole new level of significance, because why would you go in the final weeks of your presidency sign an order that shares yeah. intel with 17 agencies instead of 3, and an urgency to do it for the incoming administration, rules you would never live under?
It is remarkable. Think about this. The UN ambassador, who doesn't really have an intelligence operation, was unmasking all the time under Obama. And then in the final days of the administration, after 2 years of the intelligence community raising concerns about who should have access to this information, after the Obama administration went to the FISA court and belatedly disclosed hundreds of violations just before the election, they make the decision that they're going to disseminate sensitive intelligence to more people, not less people, expand the universe of people who can gain it and potentially leak it at the beginning of the Trump administration. That is the concern. And I think the documents that Jay Sekulow's group got yesterday are a significant find. They put into perspective this rushed effort to spread intelligence to people whose jobs did not require it.
Yeah.
Tracy, all I'm going to say, two words, one name, Evelyn Farkas.
I know. She's been like one of your favorites throughout this story.
Evelyn Farkas and Joseph Mifsud are two people that I have held on to their tales since the beginning. And I want to make sure nobody ever forgets Evelyn Farkas. Because that is going to, it is invariably going to pop up. Her interviews, her early interviews, where she started stepping on her own dick, and she started realizing she was saying things that she shouldn't be saying, and that it was coming out very, very wrong on television early on. I can guarantee that her name is going to pop up again soon.
I can guarantee it as well. And that kind of leads into the next story that I wanted to chat with you before we end the show today, Frank. General Michael Flynn, Patriots of high proportions, in my opinion. There is Sidney Powell is his attorney. This case is not going anywhere. And I think, you know, Technofog does a fantastic job with all these court documents and stuff. And he tagged teams with Margot Cleveland quite a bit. And Techno has some information out there in regards to the Flynn transcripts that he's been talking about. So there was a status conference the other day because Sidney Powell and a couple of other folks have stepped in to represent General Flynn. I think, you know, I wish they would have done this a long time ago, but you've got to just trust their judgment about why it took so long for him to replace these attorneys. And I mean, the judge made it a point to get on the record in this status conference that he had received a copy of Sidney Powell's book, and that the book was very complimentary to him because of the way he handled, oh gosh, what was that other case? Please help me.
I don't know.
You don't know.
Wait.
It was another case that I am completely blanking right now. Judge Sullivan. Okay, here it is. Judge Sullivan had basically handled that had to deal with Brady information and receiving the government providing exculpatory evidence to the defense in order to defend themselves and not withholding that evidence. And it was, we talked about this a long time ago during the sentencing hearing where judge flipped out because of what had gone on or whatever. In this other case, he had completely reversed a conviction because the government had withheld exculpatory evidence from the defendant that proved his innocence. And the judge received a copy of this book, Sidney Powell's book called License to Lie. She sent it to him. And on the third page, she wrote, Judge Emmett Sullivan, to all of those who seek hollow due justice, with the greatest respect and gratitude for your honorable service, Sidney Powell, April 24th, 2014. And the judge says there were at least two very complimentary sections of this book that I read, and about a trial that I presided over and me and things that happened in the trial, and the saga continued after the trial. And he said, I'm embarrassed to say I've not read the entire book, Miss Powell. I did read the chapters about me and the Ted Stevens trial, but I just thought I would put that on the record.
I guess just to be upfront that I know that you like me, and
I was flattered by the book, and I've read the book, and I know, you know what I mean? He was very flattered by it, he said, and he said what a great attorney she is, and basically kissed her butt a little bit, and they got on with things. Now, I love it because Emmett Sullivan is one of the fair ones left, okay? And there were, Margot Cleveland did this brilliant piece back when Sidney Powell first was announced as the attorney. And it was like four different scenarios, very lengthy piece. But she, I believe, is an attorney herself. And she did this piece about like, what are the four different scenarios that Sidney Powell could explore? You know, they've got to be really careful because Michael Flynn pled guilty. And in pleading guilty, you acknowledge that you've done whatever it is, the offense that you're being, charged with was, in order for usually a lesser sentence, rather than go through the whole process, right? And so they have to handle it carefully because he could be prosecuted more harshly if it comes out that he doesn't think he was guilty of the things that they accused him of doing after he's already pled to them. You know what I mean? So right. This was a big thing in the Michael Cohen piece because they said, you know, Michael Cohen was caught on the phone saying he didn't do these things with Tom Arnold. Remember those tapes that were released?
Yeah.
And they were like, you know, he pled guilty to that stuff. They could reverse his plea deal and all kinds of stuff. So it's like a really kind of fine line that she's got to walk here. The back of my hand is itchy. That's really weird. So the transcript of the status conference comes out and Technofog goes over it. And basically, Sidney Powell comes out and says, I think I'm going to need clearance and access to a SCIF to go over classified information. And the government says, well, there is no classified information in the production of documents that we've provided, so you're not going to need a clearance. And Sidney Powell says, yes, I will, because there's more. And the government attorney's just basically like, uh-oh.
What the hell where do you think this is going?
What we've been kind of talking about for a while, the possibility that there is a FISA warrant on General Flynn. And Dan Bongino did a great job on his show yesterday laying this out for people too, that there was a FISA warrant on General Flynn and that the conversations that he had with Kislyak didn't come from unmasking and didn't come from incidental collection, but came because they had an active FISA warrant on General Flynn that they were using to spy on him.
And the basis of that warrant obviously would be fraudulent, which means that from the get-go, all of this would be have been ill-gotten.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
Now, it gets deeper and deeper here because as Dan Bongino played a clip on his show of Lindsey Graham asking Clapper and I think it was Yates straight up whether or not they were unmasking, if there was a request for an unmasking of these people, of Flynn, and then an identification and unmasking of him, would there be a record of it somewhere? Like, you guys have to keep a record of this, right? I mean, you have to write it down somewhere. It needs to be recorded when you ask for this. And they wouldn't answer the question. They're like, oh, we can't answer that in this setting. We can go to a different setting and answer the question. It's ridiculous. They didn't want to answer the question because they don't have a record of it, because that's not how they got it. And so Dan was making the point that the reason why this information was leaked to the media about an unmasking during that time was to begin to perpetuate the narrative that it was just because they were already listening to Kislyak and he was talking about whatever he was talking about. So they requested an unmasking of General Flynn to see who it is that was on the other side of the conversation. Now, back in the day, a long time ago, I did a whole piece on this. And I got to dig it up and find it because I said the same thing. And a lot of people were like, no, he was picked up in incidental collection, you know, while they were monitoring Kislyak's phone calls. And this kind of all fed into the theory that I had, which I'm not sure if I still agree with. But at the time, reading through General Flynn's plea deal, I said that he took a plea so that he would be able to expose all of this. And it was something called like General Flynn Takes a Plea for the Nation or something like that. I don't remember exactly what I called it, but it was along this vein. And Bongino made an interesting point yesterday that I thought was really interesting. He said, it appears as though the context for the FISA warrant on Flynn could have been because they were using Farah to make a case that he was a foreign asset. Do you understand what I mean by that?
That would tie into all of the financial things, the projects he had going on overseas.
Yeah, well, basically what they're saying is, go ahead.
Wasn't there something that he did get involved in that was shady financially that might have been, what was it?
There's more and more coming out. He was working with Turkey. It was a Turkey thing. And he had a business partner who's on trial right now. The hearings, the trial actually begins in July. He's pleading not guilty. This Khan is his last name. And General Flynn is testifying against him. So basically, they were advised that they didn't need to go ahead and file under Farah. And so they didn't.
Okay. And then that's what it was.
Yeah. And then later on, it kind of came back around, like, you guys really, after the election, you should retroactively file Farah, which they did, and it didn't matter. They still brought his business partner up on charges. But I, in researching his business partner, Frank, had found connections to Podesta, etc. And I don't think that the General Flynn was aware that there were those connections, not serious connections, light connections, right? And I don't think he was aware of it. And also, it's come out, you know, I've read on the internet in certain places, and it makes sense to me that the company during the run-up to the election, when this stuff was actually happening, these quote shady business dealings, Flynn wasn't really running the company because he was so busy campaigning with Trump. So it just appears to me that it's possible that he didn't even have any clue that any of this was happening while it was being done under the guise of his company.
Gotcha.
So what Bongino was saying yesterday is that the Obama administration, rather than like, was using the fact that Flynn was, you know, working for another government, not working for them, but, you know, lobbying, so to speak, right? And not filing a Farah declaration as a pretext for getting a FISA warrant, because you can't get a FISA warrant unless somebody is working on behalf of a foreign government, as, you know, in a pejorative way. So that's how they got the FISA on Carter Page, because he supposedly was a Russian agent, right? Well, right. They to get a FISA warrant on Flynn, they would have probably made the case he was some kind of a Turkish agent. And the reason why is because he was so anti-foreign policy on Obama's side, and he saw right through everything that the Obama administration was doing. Circling General Flynn back into the setup involving Stefan Halper and the meeting, and then saying that he was, you know, cheating with this Russian honeypot who was actually just a journalist. The whole story is starting to come full circle. It's crazy. Man. And I just got all this in the past, like, several hours and last night. So I just want everybody to give me a little bit of leeway here on some finite details, just because I haven't done my usual deep, deep, deep dive.
I'm going to probably have to go. And first of all, I'll keep my eyes open for whatever you put forward in the next couple of days, but I'm going to have to go and listen to the last couple episodes of Dan Bongino, because I have to get up to date with all this stuff.
Yeah. Yesterday's show is really good. And then also, go to the library on Telegram.
Okay.
Finch is sharing all kinds of amazing stuff in there all the time. If you guys don't know, the now defunct and banned off Twitter for the 30,000th time, Harold Finch has.
He's dangerous. He's a dangerous man.
Very dangerous. The information is just like knives.
Needs to be stopped.
Well, they can't stop him on Telegram. So he's got a room he calls the library, where he posts all kinds of wonderful information that is really great, that he cultivates from around. And I guess I can put the link to join up to the library in the show notes.
That'd be great. I'm sure he'd appreciate it too.
Yeah. Yeah. He's wonderful. There was one last thing I wanted to talk about before we went, and it's escaping me. Okay. What was it, Frank? You don't know.
I don't know, because I think everything that we talked about, we were going to talk about.
We did has been
spoken about.
Hmm.
And all that jazz.
Oh, God. Do you watch Big Brother?
Nope. I don't watch anything.
I know, neither do I. I watch Big Brother. I watched The Blacklist. And that's basically
it. Oh, that's right. Lauren and I, we got to like episode 5 of Blacklist. And we really, really liked it. And then 3 other things just took over.
Oh, that's too bad.
We'll go back around to it because I like James Spader.
Yeah, he's good. I really like him too. What did I send myself here? Well, we talked quickly about Clint, about the binder in James Comey's safe.
Yeah.
The binder of Clinton emails. Melania Trump named Melania Trump's spokesperson, Stephanie Grisham, is named as the next White House press secretary. And there has been a lawsuit filed against Omarosa for failing to disclose her financial stuff after she left. And so the government is suing her for $50,000.
I just would love for all of this to escalate quickly now.
I'm reading the whole thing right now. And I still, there's been, you know, Liz Mayer, who's being sued by Devin Nunes, supposedly, has come out and said she got discovery requests from his attorneys and stuff. And I asked Julie, who posted on Twitter from AM Greatness, to let me know where she found this lawsuit on Pacer. Because I see the complaint being shared, but it's just the complaint without the detail, like without the case number and stuff. I can't find this damn thing to follow it. I can't find it on Pacer. I don't know.
Well, you already have a few legs up on me when it comes to Pacer and all that, because I don't know how to even use it.
It's okay. It's really interesting, but you probably wouldn't want to be using it. It's a lot of reading, and you like your show. I'm always blown away by how you write your show, because I could never do that. I just couldn't do it. You have a lot of work to do before your show.
Well, tonight's show is going to be a little bit shorter. I have band practice because we have a gig on Friday, so I have no show Friday. I'm going to get off tonight around 8:20, so I'm going to go live around 6:45, so I get as close to 2 hours in as possible, but I have a pretty interesting guest on tonight. His name is Timothy Gordon, and he usually co-hosts the podcast with Dr. Taylor Marshall. He has a Catholic and theology channel on YouTube. And I got into that channel because of a few different things. Number one, they covered all of the investigations into child abuse and all of the weird transition from the resignation of Pope Benedict into Francis. I wanted to know what people were, because I was always just so confused about that. Why did this happen? Especially since it's all these years later and Pope Benedict is still alive.
Yeah.
You know, so so that's how I found them, because I wanted answers on that particular situation. And then of course they get into other topics that I also found interesting, like the secrets of Fatima and stuff like that, and, you know, apocalyptic type of tones, end time stuff. I really like it because it's not crazy sounding. They just talk about what's out there and the history and modern cultural parallels and all that. So it was interesting, especially with how much disarray the Catholic Church is in. It's going to be good to have him on. And Timothy Gordon is a young voice and more in my generation. It's gonna be
that's
a fun time.
That's really interesting, actually. I just actually accidentally stumbled across a case against the CIA that whoever is suing actually won the case. Frederick Banks. That's weird. That never happens.
What was the case about?
Habeas corpus. I'm reading. I don't know. I'll keep reading this and share it when I find anything interesting. But I saw somebody suing the CIA, which is very rare. It's not rare to sue the CIA, but the way this looks is rare. Anyway, I guess that's all we got for today, Frank.
That's all we got.
But, you know, I'll keep trying to keep on top of things. And we'll come back on Friday with hopefully some more information. Oh, before we go, guys, I just wanted to thank everybody out there who has written a review for us on Apple Podcasts. You may not realize it when you're doing it, but that helps this show so much. So if you have something positive to say about us, or, you know, I mean, I can't stop you from writing a negative review, but I don't know why you'd be listening if you didn't like us, right?
Right.
Please go over there, take a few minutes and give us a review on Apple Podcasts. It would be great.
Although people are pretty abusive to themselves these days. So I can imagine that a lot of people will listen to things that they know that they'll hate just to feel the fire of
hatred
burning inside of them. Yes.
Yeah, I know. Some of the emails.
Sometimes I do it to myself.
You put yourself in hell.
You know, I'm going to hate this, but there might be something inside of here I can use. Let me go. Let me watch it.
I can't do that. Oh, goodness. You guys have been listening to the Dark to Light podcast with
Hump Day Val
and Beans. You guys can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2:30 Eastern Time on TuneIn, Stitcher, Apple iTunes, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com. We will see you Friday.
Later.
Radio Influence strives to bring you excellence in podcasting. We work with personalities like TV chef Brian Duffy, radio personalities like Ian Beckles, news and political pundits like independent journalists Frank and Tracy Beans, experts from the sports world like veteran football scout and coach Chris Landry, pro wrestling personality David Penzer, MMA experts Jason Floyd and Daniel Galvan, and strength and conditioning coach Jeff Crochelle. If you're looking for food, sports, music, entertainment, politics, no matter the topic, Radio Influence has something for everyone. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.